Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The first update I have is that Mayank Sharma has just posted an interview he did with me over at the Pact Publishing site. Here's the intro he did from the interview. Quote, "When I first ran my Linux distribution almost a decade ago, there weren't many places I could turn to for help. Whatever mailing list you tuned into, everybody seemed to be concerned with improving the Linux kernel or some other gibberish task. If ever, my newbie queries always returned back with a single word, RTFM. That's until Jeremy Garcia, fresh into his first full-time Linux job, decided to give something back to the community. His website, LinuxQuestions.org, soon became the one-stop source for all Linux-related user queries. In all these years, I'm yet to come across a single Linux user that hasn't, at one point or the other, benefited from Linux Questions. For the statistically inclined, Linux Questions' 200,000 registered members had posted over 2 million posts as per stats available in December. In this interview, the site's founder discusses how LinuxQuestions.org has outgrown its forum board-only image and spawned a hardware compatibility list, a wiki, a social bookmarking site, and a podcast." End quote. So first let me say thanks for the kind words, Mayank. It's really always great to see when others think that LQ is adding real value to the community. And really for me and for the site in general, that is what it's all about. We want to be a community resource that benefits everyone, and we really do our best to do that. Next, as always, we're looking for feedback on the podcast. One thing you can do if you like the podcast is help us get publicity, and one of the easiest ways to do that is go over to a site like Podcast Alley, or I noticed yesterday Dig added podcasts, and someone already added the LQ podcast when I had looked, which is great. Whoever did that, I appreciate it. So you can head over to Dig and vote for the podcast there. Now, wherever you see it, if you want to vote for it, or if you see a podcast directory that we aren't in, feel free to add it. But along with that publicity, we want to know what you think of the podcast. You know, what can we do better? What do you want to hear more of? Even what do you want to hear less of? I'm sure there's something we could be doing better or be doing in addition to what we're doing. So if you have any ideas, we'd like to hear any feedback. You can send me an audio comment and I'd be happy to play it on the show, or else you can post in the comments on the site, or even sending me an email, whatever you prefer. We take feedback pretty much any way we can get it. And actually, in this podcast, in the show notes for this week, I'll put a link to Podcast Alley and Dig just to make it easy. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is It Takes a Monopoly. And this is a post entitled, "For Reasons That Have Little to Do with the Product Itself, Windows Vista Simply Can't Lose," by Robert X. Cringley. And in there, he points out why Vista will be a winner. And here's a quote from that article, which is posted to his blog. Quote, "Windows Vista is finally here, a shadow of what it was once supposed to be. But here nonetheless, and now the pundits are holding forth on whether or not Microsoft's new operating system will succeed. What a waste of good punditry. Of course Vista will succeed, and those who think it will fail simply do not know what they're talking about. There have been good operating systems from Microsoft, and bad operating systems from Microsoft, but of those, only one that I know of can truly be said to have failed. Bob, the so-called social interface operating system, I always figured was really named after me. Bob was a functional failure, a user catastrophe, but Microsoft had weathered those before. Remember DOS 4? What might have made Bob fail was its design, which was flawed to say the least, or, as my mother would put it, crappy. But what allowed Bob to fail was something much different, the fact that the operating system wasn't strategic for Microsoft or for users. Nobody needed Bob, and nobody was forced to use him against their will, which sounds a lot like my old dating life, but is actually more profound than that. Microsoft practically guaranteed that Bob would fail by creating no artificial situation. Say the forced retirement of the last pre-Bob OS, that forced people to use Bob whether they liked it or not. Microsoft, a company that eventually learns from its mistakes, will not make that particular mistake again, certainly not with Windows Vista, in which they have a $5 billion investment. What we'll see for ourselves and read about over the next 6 months, then, are users complaining about Vista instability, an inevitably emerging vulnerability to hackers, and applications that don't work as well as they used to under XP. Enterprise customers will hold back in droves. But does any of this make Vista a failure? Nope. End quote. So, basically, he contends that since Microsoft has the ability to force Vista on the market, and it does, I don't even think that's arguable, it simply can't lose. And you know what? He's right, at least for a certain definition of win and lose, because most people simply go to the store and purchase a new PC without even knowing what an operating system is, let alone caring what Vista actually is. They will almost assuredly get Vista with the next PC they buy, and that's because most PC OEMs simply preload whatever Microsoft has the latest of when they ship their PCs. Now, while many corporations make slightly more educated decisions, for other reasons, including compatibility, and also the perception that choosing Microsoft is safe, no one ever got fired for buying Microsoft is one of the common quotes you hear in a corporation, and that's something that shouldn't be understated. But businesses will eventually go to Vista, at least likely in many cases. You can be certain, I think, though, that we won't be seeing droves of people upgrading for some whiz-bang feature that Vista holds. And in a way, while from a market share perspective, that it will eventually make Vista a winner, I think it will still be a loser in the grand scheme of things. And let me explain a little bit what I mean about that. There is a very real chance that this upgrade cycle is the last one where Microsoft is the 100% default de facto choice, with both Apple and really multiple Linux distributions really gaining traction at this point. If I were Microsoft, I would have seen this as a chance to get a fabulous release out to solidify mindshare in the market and really just put a stranglehold on that 90% or whatever it is market share. You know, this was a perfect chance to really solidify themselves, and I'm not sure Vista is going to do that. Instead, what you have is a product that has been stripped of almost all of the promised innovation and interesting features, and there's very little left compelling in Vista, and they still managed for it to be way late to market, so it's really the worst of both worlds. So you end up with a loser that will still make tens of millions of dollars of profit, but could have been so much more. The next story I have is Microsoft wins industry standard status for Office. So it looks like the ECMA International has approved Office OpenXML as an official industry standard. From the article, quote, ECMA International, a group of makers of both hardware and software based in Geneva, that includes Microsoft, designated the Word, Excel, and PowerPoint formats of Microsoft's Office OpenXML as official industry standards. Governments and businesses are often limited to buying software designed as industry standards. Microsoft sought a standards designation for its new Office file formats after OpenDocument, a competing set of formats backed by International Business Machines, Sun, and other companies, was approved in May by the International Organization for Standardization, or ISO, also based in Geneva, which sets global standards. Jan Vandeveld, Secretary General of ECMA International, said IBM alone among the 21 members voted against approving the Microsoft standard. He also said ECMA's General Assembly, which met in Zurich, agreed to petition the ISO to declare the Microsoft format as a global standard. Bob Suter, IBM's Vice President for Open Source and Standards, called Microsoft's Office format technically unwieldy, requiring software developers to absorb 6,000 pages of specifications compared with 700 for OpenDocument. The practical effect is that only people who are going to be in a position to implement Microsoft's specifications are Microsoft, Suter said. Vandeveld of ECMA said the standard recognized reality. The vast amount of data in the world is in Microsoft format, he said. End quote. So I have a couple different comments here. And for those of you that are regular listeners to the podcast, the Open Document topic is one that I cover quite a bit and one that I really think is extremely important. So first off, you got to give kudos to IBM for standing up on this one. They were the sole vote against it, and you have to thank them for that. Now next, it's clear that, once again, Microsoft is only doing this because they were forced to. The success of ODF, and especially what has been going on in Massachusetts, is probably the real driver here, and it's not Microsoft wanting to adhere to his new open standard. Now, one thing that I don't like about the standard is that, at least as I read it, and I could be wrong here, you must implement everything in the standard and nothing not in the standard to get a license for it. And the only one that doesn't need to abide by those rules is Microsoft itself, because they own the product and therefore don't have to follow the license, which means that it is way too easy for them to make Office incompatible with the standard, and then once again it pretty much turns into a proprietary standard. Next, the 6,000 pages of specification does make it seem overly complex. You don't have to believe IBM on this one, though, and obviously they are not an unbiased opinion in this because they are backing ODF, but I got this off of what one of the Word developers said on an MSDN blog. Quote, "If we had to add support for OpenXML to Mac Word 12 without being able to port code from WinWord, the read and write estimate shrinks down to about 8.5 man years, and that's 44 weeks times 5 devs times 2 for read write. Doing the work for PowerPoint and Excel is strictly a multiple of Word because about 30% of the XML elements are shared between the three apps. So, for all of Mac Office, I'd estimate it would take a total of about 5 devs over the release cycle to add full OpenXML support starting from scratch as part of the larger product." End quote. And you can read the entire post for more details. Like I said, it's on one of the Word developers' blogs on MSDN. But that is a lot of work to implement when compared to the relative simplicity of ODF. And it should also be noted that in ODF's case, no single company controls it in the way that Microsoft controls Office OpenXML. Now lastly, the comment by the Secretary General of the ECMA International does worry me a little bit. It kind of almost makes the process seem like nothing but a rubber stamp more than anything else, and that's really not what international standards should be, at least in my opinion. The next story I have is 10 Who Matter in Open Source. And this was a post on the CRM Chump blog about 10 people who quote-unquote matter in open source. And these kind of lists are always quite subjective and obviously open to debate. There's, of course, when you whittle it down to 10, going to be some really, really important people that you're going to end up missing. But I think this article is interesting, not for the actual 10 people that the author chose, but for the amount of backstory and information contained about those people. And a couple of really interesting tidbits about more than a couple of them that I just never knew before. So if that kind of thing interests you, it's definitely worth a read. And I would just search for 10 people who matter on open source CRM Chump on Google. That's probably the easiest way to find it. And just to go over the 10 that he did pick, if you're interested, it's Eric Ullman, who's the guy who wrote SendMail, among other things. Brian Bellendorf, who's started Apache. Bruce Perens. Michael Tiemann, who's been with Red Hat for quite some time. Of course, Linus Torvalds, Paul Vixie, Larry Wall, Jamie Zawinski, ESR, and Guido Van Rossum. The last story I have is MySQL quietly drops support for Debian Linux, or do they? I've been seeing quite a bit of rumblings that MySQL quietly had dropped support for Debian, and indeed they have, kind of, but not in the way that people seem to be interpreting it. It is true that you can no longer purchase support contract for MySQL Enterprise for Debian-based systems. It's not true that they have dropped all support in the product for Debian or that they're in some way preventing it from running on Debian. And I've seen calls to fork the product, and that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense based on this, unless the people forking it plan on offering enterprise-grade MySQL support on Debian. But still, that's not a fork, that's just offering support. And as you can see on the official download page, the community download, they still do offer an Ubuntu. I think the latest version they support is Dapper. So the spin that the decision ended up taking on seemed kind of odd to me, and I had posted on my blog shortly after it happened that someone from the MySQL community should probably step up and say something, and less than an hour after I posted that, Brian had already answered it. So I'm just going to read a quick blurb from his blog. Quote, "This morning, I'm working on a bug with Monty Taylor for a customer who is having an issue with multi-CPU capabilities on Debian, which makes me surprised to read the story about us dropping support for Debian." And he references the story as it was posted on Slashdot. And then he goes on to say, "Huh? MySQL supports Debian. We have in the past, and we will continue to do so in the future. We don't build enterprise binaries on Debian yet. The enterprise project is new, and we're just starting to roll out binaries for it. Ubuntu is on the schedule to be supported next year, I believe first quarter. We don't build binaries for Debian in part because the Debian community does a good job themselves. We have traditionally only built binaries where vendors had issues or vendors didn't build binaries at all. The Debian community has never had this issue. If you call MySQL and you have support, We support you if you are running Debian, the same with SUSE, RHEL, Fedora, Ubuntu, and others. Some developers run Debian, and Ubuntu is quickly becoming the most favored distribution among developers for their desktop machines. Using Debian ourselves means that it gets tested dozens of times a day as developers work. So what do I suspect happened to generate the /stop post? We messed up some internal communications in MySQL, and someone in sales was left with the wrong information. It happens, and I can say I certainly wish it did not. There are a ton of Linux distributions, and I can see where this could happen. Like all companies, we could do better to communicate this information internally. The fact is, though, that we support it, and we're going to continue to support it. End quote. So there it is. Like I said, the community download is already available and has always been available for Ubuntu. And he even goes a step further and says the enterprise product will be available. It just isn't at this time. But if you're using Debian and would like support for MySQL, aside from those binaries, they'll be happy to support you. So great clarification. Good to know. It seemed like a pretty big overreaction at first, but glad that it got sorted out pretty quickly. And that's kind of the power of blogging and being transparent with your policies. As some companies, if something like this had got out that was incorrect like this, it would have continued to disseminate and cause a lot of PR problems. Where here, someone got out right away, cleared it up, and surely minimized quite a bit of headache. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.